How are houses of worship dealing with the coronavirus pandemic? Many states and cities have issued orders for residents to stay at home, but there are exemptions for religious services. In Virginia and Maryland, for example, there's a limit to the number of people that can be in attendance, only 10. And while some churches, synagogues, temples, and mosques have decided on their own to stop holding services, clergy are still very much serving their congregations, struggling to maintain a sense of community amid a loss of routine, ritual, and at times, a sense of peace. Joining us now to talk about that are three leaders from three different faiths. First, Rabbi Brigida Rosenberg of the United Hebrew Congregation in St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Next, we have Imam Suhaib Webb. He serves as the resident scholar at the Islamic Center of New York University in New York City. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Jesse Rincones, Executive Director of Convención Bautista Hispana de Texas, a collection of over 1,000 Baptist congregations in Texas. Welcome to you.
Pleasure to be here, Lulu.
So, Rabbi Rosenberg, I'd like to start with you. You and your staff at the United Hebrew Congregation serve over 900 families, as I understand it. And St. Louis County is under a stay-at-home order, but with an exemption for religious gatherings. Have you transitioned to virtual services, and what has that experience been like?
Yes, we did transition to virtual services. We did so after the stay-at-home order. Actually, I believe we did it right beforehand. Transitioning to virtual services itself was pretty easy, as we had already been live streaming our services for the homebound or when people needed it. I know especially college students often would listen to our services. But I know for many congregants, it has taken some getting used to not being together and just sitting in their homes and listening and feeling like they're watching as opposed to participating.
Imam Suhaib, you normally serve at the Islamic Center on NYU's Manhattan campus, but because it's now been closed for almost a month, you've also transitioned to all online. Can you just describe a little bit of what that's been like?
Since we're under the purview of kind of NYU, we kind of were able to jump in front of everything, especially being in New York City. So we shut everything down early on. As the rabbi mentioned, we had everything already in place for kind of the virtual setup. So I think what we learned from this is that people need more from religious institutions than just religion. So we have a program on the arts. We have a program for yoga. I run private programs for youth. We have 1,000 young people signed up in our 13 to 15-year-old demographic. So it allowed us also to realize how valuable, if you will, the mosque, the synagogue, and the church is in people's lives in ways that aren't explicitly spiritual. So that's been something that we learned. I think the second thing is being in New York City, one of our colleagues' mother-in-law died this week. So we've had to deal also with the brunt of people calling us and saying that they can't bury their dead because there's too long of a line to bury people at the Muslim graveyard.
And what do you say?
I mean, we have to come in now as pastors and ministers and then also explain to them religiously that that's okay, right? Because there's this duality. There's the loss, and then there is this, does the religion expect me now immediately to follow everything that the religion in Islam, we bury people pretty quickly. So walking them through the process that theodicy brings about mercy.
Jesse, I'm going to bring you in. You were a pastor for 18 years, and now you head an organization that oversees over 1,100 individual Hispanic congregations across the state of Texas, which is a huge area. You've been helping pastors through the steps of transitioning online. I understand it looks very different from where you're sitting than the two stories we just heard.
That's correct. The vast majority of our congregations are smaller congregations, 50 and under on average on a Sunday morning. The churches, besides the pastor, tend not to have any part-time or full-time staff. So although some were already practicing online streaming or video streaming their services, many of them, this was not even on their radar. So we've spent a lot of our time early on resourcing and helping and encouraging those pastors that in turn have to turn around and do the same for their congregations.
Jesse, also in the state of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott has deemed religious services as essential, and that people are encouraged to hold services virtually but are still allowed to gather. Is that confusing to people and also to pastors?
Yes, it was. It was pretty clear before that announcement. Most churches were resorting to streaming and video and telephones. But then when that announcement was made it sound as if the churches could convene if they couldn't do live streaming. But what they were actually referring to was permitting churches to do the drive-in type of churches where they could drive up into the parking lot and park in their cars and listen to those. So I've actually seen, they've done it here in San Antonio and other communities where the mayors have had to have sessions explaining that, the doors are not open for the churches to gather, but unfortunately it was taken that way just because the churches were deemed essential.
Rabbi Rosenberg, I want to come back to you because, of course, Passover starts this coming Wednesday. And just listening to specifically what Imam Suhaib was saying about how religious organizations have to function on so many different levels. But, of course, Passover is an enormously important moment in the Jewish faith. How is your congregation dealing with the fact that you all won't be able to physically come together this year?
I know in my congregation, there's that initial sense of mourning that Passover is not going to look like what it has looked like in previous years. We have moved our congregational Seder over to the virtual platform. So on the one hand, I think people are trying to work through it. I do know last night a group of us had met and we really talked about, just as the imam had said, how can we say to ourselves, these aren't normal times? And so maybe the rules that always seem a little bit strict, we have to relax them a little bit in order to allow ourselves to find that space to celebrate this holiday. So whereas we may not be utilizing technology on a normal Passover, we are going to be using it this time so that we can connect.
Imam Suhaib, this is, of course, something that you're going to face as well. Ramadan starts later this month. That also consists of big family meals, long nightly prayers, and that doesn't seem like it's going to be possible for the foreseeable future. What are you advising or doing?
Well, I think also just kind of piggybacking on what the rabbi said, you know, religion has been dealing with this for centuries in Muslim tradition in particular. The bubonic plague is something that waylaid Egypt, waylaid Palestine, waylaid Syria. So you will find within our tradition these dispensations, what we call dispensations and acts of worship. And one of them is Ramadan. You know, for people who are actually sick, they're not expected to fast. There are other things that are happening. So we're seeing people talk about BYOI, bring your own iftar. Iftar is the dinner that people have when they break their fast. And people would be virtually, you know, like say 300 or 400 people on Zoom. You're all looking at each other and someone makes the call to prayer and makes the supplication. So it's an opportunity to see how churches, synagogues, and mosques and other houses of worship can really adapt in unique ways.
Jesse, as you know, we're entering Holy Week. The president has said in a press briefing early on that he'd like to get the country back to normal by Easter. He's now walked that back. I can imagine that got people's hopes up for a moment.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Christmas and Easter, the highlights of Christian celebrations. And I've heard pastors suggesting that Easter morning when they would normally gather at their church at, say, 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning to maybe step outside of their homes and share a prayer or do a prayer walk around their neighborhood. So we're definitely exploring how we can continue to be the church, which has been a constant message that we are the church, not because we gather in a building or in a facility, but wherever our presence is, we should continue to minister and serve our communities.
I'd like to ask each of you now if there's a particular story or a line in scripture or just something that you are holding on to that is helping you get through this difficult time. And Jesse, I'm going to start with you.
2 Corinthians 9:8 says that God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. And I think it's easy for us in these moments when there is a shortage of everything from toilet paper to eggs and milk to think that our lack might keep us from continuing to fulfill our faith. But that promise allows us that no matter what the circumstance, we can continue to abound in every good work.
Rabbi Rosenberg?
In our community, what we've been drawing on as we prepare for Passover is just this notion of how we've been here before, thinking about the story that we're going to be telling next week, the story of our redemption and exodus from Egypt. What were our ancient ancestors sitting there thinking on that night, thinking, when is this going to pass? When are we going to be free? All of this anticipation. And yet, as they sat, as they listened to Moses, as they followed God, you know, eventually they found that redemption. And so in that message, one of the things that we have been saying is, what is it that each of us can do? Some of that is as simple as stay at home. And then from the confines of our homes, just as we've been hearing from everybody else, how can you reach out to others? And then when we are all working together, that's when we are going to help get ourselves through this, which will very much feel like that redemption from what we're experiencing right now at this moment.
Imam Suhaib.
So when this happened, I was, you know, lucky enough to see a large number of our congregants who are actually working in the emergency rooms. One of them, Bushrat Ali, who was an elderly gentleman who lost his life serving people. It's profound to see the extension of your religious faith exercised by your congregants, if that makes sense, in ways that are more powerful than perhaps I engage it theoretically or intellectually. To be awed by your congregants, to see the grace of God shined back at you. And then there's this very beautiful prophetic tradition that Muhammad said, somebody who is acting as a nurse or physician in today's terms, as long as they are standing to serve the sick, they are recipients of transcendent mercy. So when I see, you know, these people really sacrificing their lives for us, that tradition really kind of has impacted me.
That was Imam Suhaib Webb, resident scholar at NYU's Islamic Center in New York City, Rabbi Brigitta Rosenberg of United Hebrew Congregation in St. Louis, Missouri, and Jesse Rincones, executive director of the Convención Bautista Hispana de Texas in Texas. Thank you all so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.